Welcome to the second hour's reading of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Local News Roundup. Award Presentation. The second annual Justin Cunningham Law Enforcement Award presentation has been scheduled for 3 p.m. August 14th on the west side of the Ector County Courthouse. Honored recipients will be retired Odessa Police Department Deputy Chief Jesse Duarte and retired District Attorney Chief Investigator Joe Commander. The event is free and open to the public. Visit tinyurl.com/y8uq6hpo. WTFB, in need of help. The West Texas Food Bank, WTFB, has set up a few opportunities for the community to get involved, since this year is different due to COVID-19. WTFB is now accepting small volunteer groups and individuals through its new volunteer website, wtxfoodbank.volunteer-hub.com, to help them keep organized. Local communities are also encouraged to start a virtual food drive or to just donate at wtxfoodbank.org/host-a-food-drive. In addition, partner agencies are encouraged to add their link at wtxfoodbank.org/how-to-get-help for people who are in need of help. For additional information, call 580-6333 or visit wtxfoodbank.org. Death notices for Sunday, October 4th. Joe Douglas Howell. Joe Douglas Howell, 83, of Midland, died Monday, August 31st. A memorial service is scheduled for 3 p.m. October 10th at Nally Picklin Welch Funeral Home Chapel. Arrangements are by Nally Picklin Welch Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Jose Lujan. Jose Lujan, 72, of Midland, died Monday, September 28th. Chapel service is scheduled for October 6th at American Heritage Funeral Home. Mr. Luna will be interred in Mexico. Arrangements are by American Heritage Cemetery, Funeral Home, Crematory of Midland. Emmanuel Armando Nano Urias. Emmanuel Armando Nano Urias, 18, of Odessa, died Saturday, September 26th. A celebration of life will be held at 10 a.m. Tuesday, October 6th at La Margarita Fairgrounds, 1261 West Monahans in Odessa. Burial will follow at Ector County Cemetery in the Odessa 2 section with Pastor Cliff DeArmond officiating. Arrangements are by Martinez Funeral Home and Crematory of Odessa.
Midland Reporter-Telegram obituaries, Sunday, October 4th. Colonel Andre Catania, retired. Army officer passed away at his home September 14th, 2020. He was preceded in death by his wife, Jackie. He is survived by his two sons and their wives, Andrea and Richard Catania, Sylvia and Bertrand Catania, and three grandchildren, Rick, Charlotte, and Mathilde. Donations in his memory can be made to the Wounded Warrior Project, P.O. Box 758-516, Topeka, Kansas, 66675. Or go to woundedwarriorproject.org. Fred S. Wright III. Fred S. Wright III, 69, passed peacefully in his daughter's home in Houston, surrounded by the love, devotion, and prayer of his family, on 10 September 2020. Fred was preceded in death by many friends, his beloved uncle, T.R. Wright, and then his parents, whom he selflessly served as caregiver in their later years, Fred S. Wright Jr. and Elizabeth Betsy Payne Wright of Midland. He is survived by his wife, Jan Taylor Wright of Midland, and their children, daughter Tracy Gothier Jackson and husband Dano Jackson of Big Lake, Fred IV and wife Carmen Mattox of Montrose, Colorado, his grandson Fred V, his daughter Sarah Wright of Houston, as well as his siblings Carol Wright Bailey and husband Art, Thomas P. Wright and wife Judy, Father Robert E. Wright, Richard W. Wright and wife Diane, Christopher H. Wright and wife Cecilia, Shelley E. Wright, and Earl Wright and wife Maryland. Fred was born 6 August 1951 in Midland. His celebrations will be held at St. Anne's Parish in Midland on Thursday, 8 October 2020 at 1600 hours, along with a memorial at Our Lady of Guadalupe Parish, oldest church in Colorado, in Conejos, Colorado, Saturday, 10 October 2020 at 10 o'clock. Gabriel Brito Natividad. Gabriel Brito Natividad received his final promotion by our Lord and Savior Jesus Christ. He lived on this earth for 85 years, but will be in heaven for eternity, waiting for us that have accepted Jesus Christ as the way, the truth, and the light. Those left to mourn his loss are his wife, Natty Natividad, children Gabriel C. Natividad, Abel and Anna Natividad, and Maggie and James Ramirez, all of Midland, Diana and husband George Dale from Andrews, his 10 grandchildren and 15 great-grandchildren and 9 great-great-grandchildren, as well as cousins, nephews, and nieces, too numerous to count. He is preceded in death by his parents, Juan and Dolores Natividad, and brother Manuel Natividad. He was born December 3, 1934, in Anadarko, Oklahoma, to Juan and Dolores Natividad. Services are as follows. Viewing is to be announced. Please check on the Ellis Funeral Home Midland, Texas website. Live stream of the private closed service, Wednesday, 2 p.m. from Ellis Funeral Home, Midland, Texas. Facebook page. Gravesite service Wednesday at Rest Haven, immediately following. Please wear masks and social distance. In lieu of flowers, the family asks for donations to West Texas Baptist Association, Camp Menard, 3300 SCR 1210, Midland, Texas, 79706. We also request any pictures or memorials be sent to DMART411@suddenlink.net. James Boyd Jim Henry. Longtime Midlander and consulting petroleum engineer, James Boyd Jim Henry, 94, left this earth on October 2nd, 2020, and now resides in heaven with his Lord and Savior, Jesus Christ. A funeral service will be held at 1 p.m. Tuesday, October 6th, at First Baptist Church, Midland, with Dr. Darren Wood officiating. Private burial will be at Rest Haven Memorial Park. Jim was born August 7th, 1926, in Lockney, Texas, to Ernest Albert and Ellie Ann Boyd Henry. Jim was preceded in death by his parents and brothers, Clois Delbert Henry and William Cordell Henry. He is survived by his wife, Billie Jean Denson Henry, two daughters, Jean Catherine Stern and husband Lewis, and Judy Beth Johnson and husband Ronald, grandchildren David James Stern and wife Amanda, Jonathan Lewis Stern and wife Natalie, Matthew Brent Johnson and wife Sarah, and Ashley Nicole Kennedy and 10 great-grandchildren. Arrangements are under the direction of Ellis Funeral Home of Midland. Jose Lujan. Jose Lujan, 72, of Midland, passed away September 28th. Jose was born March 19, 1948, to Ildefonso and Maria Samaniego in Mexico. He is survived by 4 siblings, Oman Lujan and wife Elena, Oscar Lujan and wife Darlene, Onesimo S. Lujan of Midland, and Olympia del Camp and his beloved niece, Odile Hernandez of Midland, as well as numerous nieces and nephews. He is preceded in death by his parents, Ildefonso Luján and Maria Samaniego, and four siblings, Horacio Luján, Elizardo Luján, Octavio Luján, and Hortensia Terrazas. Visitation will be held Tuesday, October 6th from 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. at American Heritage Funeral Home in Midland. Rosary immediately following until 8 p.m. Additional services will be held in Mexico. Lila Lloyd. Lila Lloyd, 80, went to be with the Lord Monday, September 28th. Born Lila Mae Pinon in Emporia, Kansas, on September 4th, 1940, she was the youngest of her family and was preceded in death by her three brothers, Lloyd Pinon, Donald Pinon, and Harley Pinon, and her sister, Alma Cooper. Lila and her husband Dave lived in Midland for 50 years. She is survived by her husband David Lloyd of Midland, her children Floyd Lloyd, Darletta J. Cox, Daryl Lloyd, and Paul Lloyd of Austin, Mike Lloyd and his wife Erin Lloyd of Midland, and grandchildren Katie and Lucas Cobe of Atlanta, Georgia, Amber and Megan J. Cox of Austin, Alex J. Cox of Abilene, Caleb Lloyd of Midland, as well as her nephew, honorary son, Edmund Lloyd, and wife, Beverly of San Marcos, Texas, and many nieces and nephews. She was buried at Fort Houston National Cemetery in San Antonio on Thursday, October 1st, at a small gravesite service with family. In lieu of flowers, please send donations to St. Jude Children's Hospital in her honor. Michael Allen Hunt. Michael Allen Hunt, 66, of Midland, passed away Monday, September 28th at 8:08 p.m. Michael was born February 21st, 1954, in Birmingham, Alabama, to Raymond Hunt and Wilma Dean Bailey Hunt. Michael is survived by his wife, Glenda Hunt, and his daughters, Christy Lynn Phillips Crawford and Lacey Renee Hunt. His sister, Ramona Diane Peel. Half-sisters Brenda Anderson and Shonda Acuna. His sister-in-law, Debbie Jean Babcock, and many nieces, nephews, and grandnieces and nephews. Michael was preceded in death by his mother, Wilma Dean Bailey Hunt, father, Raymond Hunt, brothers, Thomas Wade Prince and Robert Edward Prince, half-sister, Cynthia Dorries, brothers-in-law, David Earl Babcock and Donald Jean Peel. Per the family's wishes, a private service was held. Arrangements were under the direction of Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences may be made at npwelch.com. Shirley Graham Outs. Shirley Graham Outs, 90, of Midland, passed away Wednesday, September 23rd, in Midland. Shirley was born April 10th, 1930, to Carl and Ondine Shirley Graham in West Leechburg, Pennsylvania. She is survived by three children, William S. Bill Outs and wife Diane, Corinne Missy Preston and Brenda Tip Kerwin, three grandchildren, William S. Outs Jr. and wife Sarah, Thomas Taylor Kerwin and wife Faith, and Alexander Brown, and her nephew, Chris Carnahan, and wife Susie. She is preceded in death by her beloved grandparents, William C. Bill and Bertha Shirley, her mother, Ondine Shirley Graham Corn, father, Carl Leroy Graham, and stepmother, Lucy Gilchrist Graham, one sister, Jane Carnahan, and brother-in-law, John, and the father of her children, William R. Outs, Jr. Visitation will be held Wednesday, October 7th from 10 a.m. to 11 a.m. at American Heritage Funeral Home in Midland. Funeral services will be Wednesday, October 7th at 11 a.m. at American Heritage Funeral Home with Robert Pace of Grace Lutheran Church officiating. Burial will follow at American Heritage Cemetery. In lieu of flowers, memorial donations may be made to the Bowman Scholarship Fund at Grace Lutheran Church, Midland, Texas. Arrangements are entrusted to American Heritage Cemetery and Funeral Home, Crematory. William Wade Garlitz. William Wade Garlitz passed away at his home in San Antonio after a 2-year battle with leukemia. He was born April 30th, 1959, to Jane Adams Garlitz and Charles Gary Garlitz. Wade was preceded in death by his mother, Jane Garlitz, and his life partner of 30 years, John Payne Moore. He is survived by David Diggs, his father, Gary Garlitz, his sister, Krista Bolger, and husband, Barr, his brother, Clay Garlitz, his sister, Jane Ann Caroline Fogerson, and husband, Zeph. Also surviving are Jack Bolger and wife, Shelby, Emma Bolger, Brady Bolger, Addison Jane Garlitz, Tripp Bolger, and Gentry Bolger. Other family members include his aunt, Camille Adams Jones, and husband, Brock, his uncle, William Gale Garlitz, and wife, Dita. Cousins, Margaret Jones Rakenemy Parker Garlitz, and Great Garlitz Salas. 4 loving friends considered family by Wade are planting a tree in the Botanical Gardens in San Antonio to memorialize Wade. The family will have a private interment service at St. Nicholas Episcopal Church in Midland. A memorial service will be planned in the future when all family and friends can safely gather to celebrate Wade's wonderful life. Memorials can be made to Mission Heritage Partnership or Hemisphere Conservancy, both in San Antonio. Death notices for Sunday. Joe Douglas Howell. Joe Douglas Howell, age 83, went to his eternal home on August 31st in Midland. A memorial service will be held at 3 p.m. Saturday, October 10th at Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home Chapel. Survivors include wife, Wanda, daughter, Terry Franklin, son, Greg Howell, and daughter, Carell Zaliski. Arrangements are under the direction of Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences may be made at npwelch.com. Juanita Chambliss. Juanita Chambliss, 100, of Midland, passed away Monday, September 7th. A memorial service will be held at 11 a.m. Saturday, October 10th at the Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home Chapel. Arrangements are under the direction of Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home and Crematory in Midland. Online condolences may be made at npwelch.com.
This is Dave, and I'm reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram, Monday, October 5th, 2020. This is Section A, the front page. The headline reads, Prepare to Vote. The Elections Office encouraged residents to avoid voting at Annex, by Caitlin Randall. With less than a month until Election Day and early voting beginning October 13th in Texas, the Midland County Elections Office is preparing for what could be a record-breaking voter turnout amid a pandemic and fears of possible voter intimidation efforts. The Elections Office already had a test run of most of their new coronavirus protocols during the July runoff election. Elections Administrator Carolyn Graves said in an interview, They've also added more polling locations because fewer voting machines will fit in each location because of social distancing. Large rooms at Mid-City's church and the Horseshoe Arena's education building have been added as locations this year to accommodate additional machines, Graves said. To mitigate the spread of coronavirus, the elections office will be following the same protocols as the July runoff election, which includes socially distancing machines and voters, masks and gloves for poll workers, and making hand sanitizer available. Additionally, there will be an extra worker at each location who is tasked with cleaning voting machines after each voter, Graves said. Graves also said voters should come prepared by filling out a sample ballot ahead of time and consider voting at locations other than the Annex building. I know everyone is accustomed to coming here, and we appreciate that, she said. But there will be some other locations that are not as busy, and so we would encourage people to try those. The Annex building may have longer lines than other locations because only 8 to 10 machines can be placed there with social distancing, according to Graves. She said voting at Calvary Assembly of God, Fairmount Park Church of Christ, and St. Paul United Methodist Church likely will be less crowded. In addition to concerns over voting safely during the coronavirus pandemic, multiple news outlets have reported heightened fears regarding voter intimidation at polling places following a contentious election cycle. Some incidents have already been reported in states that have begun early voting. Graves said the elections office is having discussions about preparing for such incidents, and workers have been instructed to call the police if they see evidence of voter intimidation or harassment. However, the amount of preparation the elections office can do is limited because law enforcement officers are not permitted at polling locations, Graves said. She said security officers will be present at the annex building and public libraries as usual, but the presence of other law enforcement is prohibited under the law because it can be viewed as electioneering. We always talk to security, so they're always on call for us. We just can't have them going to the locations because that would be voter intimidation, Graves said. It's a fine line. We want all the voters to feel that they can come and vote without any pressure from anybody. This article is entitled Commentary: Commotion Surrounds Voting in Texas by Ross Ramsey, Texas Tribune. The Texas elections are looming, and the courts are full of cases about the state's laws on early voting, voting by mail, straight ticket voting, voting locations, you name it. Election day is only a month away, but the voting laws in effect today might not be the voting laws in effect when you vote. That's not very relaxing. That said, most judges are allergic to rulings that affect elections in progress, so the time for making big changes to Texas election and voting laws is drawing to a close. Voting starts probably in less than 2 weeks on October 13th. Monday is the last day to register to vote. Absentee ballots from some counties are already in the mail. Election day is November 3rd. The court should be wrapping things up. The 5th U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals issued what might be the final say on straight ticket voting this week. In 2017, the Texas legislature voted to kill one-punch voting, where you can vote for all of a party's candidates with one punch instead of working your way down the ballot. Republicans wanted to kill it. Democrats, who believe it helps their down-ballot candidates, wanted to keep it. That law takes effect this year, and November will be the first time that popular way of voting is missing from Texas ballots. Democrats sued to reinstate it, won in trial court and lost at the appellate court. One point of interest to a judge with an eye on election disruption is that some absentee ballots have already been mailed to voters without a straight ticket option. You can also find reason to believe that the legal tangles will continue through or even beyond November 3rd. The governor's pandemic-driven order to add 6 extra days for early voting, the better to extend opportunities and socially distance voters in the face of the coronavirus, is being challenged in the courts by some of his fellow Republicans. That group includes the chair of the state GOP, the state's Republican Agriculture Commissioner, a number of Republican legislators, and some conservative activists. They don't think the extra time is needed or that the governor has the power to extend early voting without the legislature, a complaint that also figures in their challenges to business closings and other pandemic restrictions issued from the governor's office. Politics aside, their lawsuit would shorten the early voting period to its original size, moving the start of early voting to October 19th from October 13th, the date everybody in politics has been advertising as the first day to vote. The courts might side with the challengers, but the longer they take, the more disruptive their ruling will be. The governor directly entered the fray Thursday with another executive order, one his fellow Republicans agree with, limiting the number of drop-off locations for absentee ballots to one per county, and allowing poll watchers the opportunity to observe any activity conducted at the early voting clerk's office location related to the in-person delivery of a marked mail ballot. Anyone voting absentee because of concerns about coronavirus infection should know that the governor's COVID-19 mask orders reintroduce the risks a mail-in ballot is supposed to avoid. The mask requirements don't apply to any person who is voting, assisting a voter, serving as a poll watcher, or actively administering an election, but wearing a face mask is strongly encouraged. Shutting down all but one location is a strike at the state's biggest and sometimes most Democratic counties. Harris and Travis, for example, were already allowing voters to drop off absentee ballots at several locations. Abbott's order said ballots collected in those locations through Friday, October 2nd, would be counted. After that, the counties have to shut them down. Keeping with the general theme of courts and elections and voting, Travis County said it will sue to stop the governor's order just hours after he signed it. The governor had already extended the delivery times for voters, saying they could bring in absentee ballots before November 3rd, along with their voter identifications, and again blaming the pandemic for the change. The new order raised official Democratic hackles and might well be another reason to keep your eyes on the courts. This is not a full inventory of the Texas voting laws being considered and reconsidered by the courts. But the disputes are already threatening to disrupt this fraught election year and an anxious electorate. Some Texans have already voted absentee, either by mail or at one of those soon-to-be less numerous drop-off sites. Maybe the judges will sort out all of the litigation and the litigants before most of us vote. Maybe they won't or can't. It's noisy. Keep your head down and vote anyway. This article is entitled State. Letter, Top Deputies Accuse Attorney General of Crimes, by Jake Blyberg, Associated Press. Dallas. Several top deputies of Texas' Attorney General have reported to law enforcement that their boss engaged in crimes, including bribery and abuse of office, according to an internal letter. In a single-page letter to the Director of Human Resources in the Attorney General's office, the seven senior lawyers wrote that they reported Republican Ken Paxton to, quote, the appropriate law enforcement authority, unquote, for potentially breaking the law, quote, in his official capacity as the current Attorney General of Texas, unquote. We have a good faith belief, and the Attorney General is violating federal and or state law, including prohibitions related to improper influence, abuse of office, bribery, and other potential criminal offenses, the Thursday letter states. It was first reported jointly by the Austin American-Statesman and KVUE-TV, and subsequently obtained by the Associated Press. The letter does not offer specifics, but nonetheless stands as a remarkable accusation of criminal wrongdoing against the state's top law enforcement officer by his own staff, including some longtime supporters of his conservative Christian politics. It could deepen legal trouble for Paxton, who has spent nearly his entire 5 years in office under felony indictment for securities fraud, although the case has stalled for years over legal challenges. Philip Hilder, Paxton's defense attorney in the securities case, declined to comment on the new allegations Sunday. Paxton pleaded not guilty in that case, but it is not clear whether the new accusations are related. In a statement to the American Statesman, Paxton's office said the complaint filed against Attorney General Paxton was done to impede an ongoing investigation into criminal wrongdoing by public officials, including employees of this office. Making false claims is a very serious matter, and we plan to investigate this to the fullest extent of the law. It's unclear what investigation is being referenced in the statement. A spokesman for the Attorney General did not immediately respond to an email and phone call Sunday. These allegations raise serious concerns, Governor Greg Abbott, also a Republican, said in a Sunday statement. He declined to comment further until the results of any investigation are complete. Indicted Texas Republican Attorney General Ken Paxton is the top law enforcement official in the state. Texas Democratic Party Chairman Gilberto Hinojoso said in a statement, yet he has proven for years that he cannot follow the law himself. The letter was signed by the Deputy Attorneys General for Policy, Administration, Civil Litigation, Criminal Investigations, and Legal Counsel, as well as Paxton's first assistant, Jeff Mateer, and Mateer's deputy. None of them responded to messages seeking comment Saturday or Sunday. Mateer resigned from Paxton's office Friday to rejoin a prominent conservative nonprofit law firm in the Dallas area, according to the Dallas Morning News. The First Liberty Institute did not immediately respond to an inquiry about him Sunday. Paxton, who is in his second term, has raised his national profile as a conservative crusader under President Donald Trump, including leading lawyers for Trump, a group supporting the president's reelection. He also spearheaded a lawsuit against the Affordable Care Act that goes before the U.S. Supreme Court this fall and was previously chairman of the Republican Attorneys General Association. A spokeswoman for the association declined to comment. Michelle Lee, a spokesman for the FBI's San Antonio office, said its agency's policy is not to comment on whether it has received allegations of crimes or is investigating. The U.S. Attorney's Office for the Western District of Texas did not immediately respond to requests for comment Sunday. Bill Miller, a veteran Texas political consultant who's worked for Republicans and Democrats, said he couldn't think of any precedent for a current elected leader's staff accusing them of crimes. "It's like, wow," he said. This article is entitled Commentary: Ministry Isn't the Same Without the Old Guard, by John Mark Eccles, The Field's Edge. When I got involved in homeless ministry 8 years ago, there was a very interesting phenomenon that took me a while to understand. It wasn't too hard to strike up at least a baseline acquaintanceship with folks who were newly homeless. Sometimes, unfortunately, that came from them seeing me as naive and a possible way to get something they needed or wanted. Other times, it was just because they hadn't been immersed in baptism by the mean streets and born again to a living hopelessness. It was easier for me to relate to someone who had hit a rough patch rather than someone whose life was one big rough patch. Relationships with what I lovingly refer to as the OG homeless people, old guard or original gangster, were a much harder and longer bridge to build. Yet by God's grace, just showing up consistently and fumbling through awkward conversations, I was eventually, but skeptically, allowed a provisional membership into Midland's most exclusive homeless inner circle. The trouble with that inner circle is that its membership changes faster than your average social club. That's because, according to the National Institutes of Health, the average age of the chronically homeless is 50, and the average life expectancy is 56, about 17 years shorter than the general population. Being chronically homeless is like being a member of the worst gang ever. The only way out is in a body bag, and there's not even any money or flashy clothes. I didn't realize it then, but in 2012, I saw the membership of that group turn over to a new generation of 50-ish folks who had spent years on the street. At that time, we lost at least one person a year to exposure. Thankfully, local organizations have been extremely proactive to get cold-weather gear out there to those without shelter, and we haven't had anyone freeze to death since 2015. You wouldn't think that would happen in Midland, but the sad reality is that it can and does. On our first day of volunteering, my wife Brianna and I were introduced to the OGs, who basically just gave us a grunt and a side eye. But it would take years of consistency for some of them to trust us enough to consider us friends. Our dear friend Lois called me, quote, "that other lawyer," unquote, I'm not a lawyer, for several years until one snowy evening while she was chilling with the Witch staff at their Christmas party and she needed a new tint, I was promoted to Marco. As I reflect on the last few years, I've faced the hard reality that there are so few of those OGs left. Vicky was the first one to go. Johnny, Karen, Randy M., Little Bear, Lois J., and sadly many more. This year alone, we lost Yoda, Ricky, Jay, and just last week, Johnny Ray. By God's grace, I can name a handful who have been lifted off the streets. Three live in RVs with the Field's Edge and will be our first village neighbors. One of them, Kay, welcomed me as a friend one cold winter night after 5 years of knowing her and some dudes, and I decided to do a street retreat. I thought it was because she thought we were crazy for sleeping out in the cold with her, but I think deeper than that, she accepted me because it put her in a unique position to minister to me. And because we laughed all night at Dave Chappell's skits, she was streaming from the jail Wi-Fi across the street on her busted phone. She hustled some dinner for us, invited us to stay at her spot, made us a pallet of blankets, and offered to stab anyone if they messed with us while we slept. You won't find those as suggestions in any book about hospitality, but I have yet to experience a more genuine welcome anywhere. It was in that same general time frame that I met Johnny Ray. I first wrote about him in 2017. It's interesting to look back because he had curated a life story to share with me that I can't say was entirely truthful. I have no idea if he was actually a veteran or if he ever had $500,000 in the bank. If I had to guess, I'd say probably not. He definitely forgot to mention that he held up the Andrews Highway Long John Silver's in 1977 and went to prison for it. Most of the stories he did tell me were inconsistent at best, always charmingly self-deprecating, full of, you know what? But always delivered with a smile and a thick Texas accent. One thing is for sure, the day we met, he was honestly contemplating the fact that he might freeze to death. He didn't know me from Adam, and he was very suspicious when I talked to him. On any other day, he probably would have told me to go jump in the river. But he was shivering violently, which neutralized many of his acquired street defenses. I can't be sure of his history, but I have to imagine that day was one of his lowest. Sitting on a retaining wall, watching his breath steam out of his mouth in a t-shirt, and wondering if his broken heart would freeze before his body did that night. After reportedly refusing to accept a coat and sleeping bag because he said he wasn't worthy, he took them in his hand but wouldn't put them on for another hour or so while he talked to me. He was so busy gabbing that he forgot he was freezing. That part always reminds me that relationships are more important than anything we can give, and that Johnny Ray was a stubborn old codger. Then before I left, he prayed for me and thanked the Lord for sending him someone to talk to, and didn't mention the warm stuff. After that, I had an in with him, and that began to grow as some volunteers and I just kept going on to see him to shoot the breeze over a burrito. There were several other times when he was in a desperately sad, sick, or cold situation, and each time, more than the stuff we were able to give him, he just wanted to hang out. Once we sent him on a Greyhound bus to reunite with family in Ohio, where he stayed for quite a few months. We took a selfie before he got on the bus because I didn't figure I'd see him again. I wrote another post about him then. He'd call about every other day just to chat and see how my family was doing. Then one day, he just showed back up and had brought this creepy, stupid-looking camo spray-painted RV and set up camp behind the truck stop. He eventually lost that too. He told us of several terminal diagnoses, none of which we could verify, and he just kept on ticking. Then he went back to jail for a long time, while for failure to register, which is a very sad surprise to me, and when he got out, the rest of his life was spent under a tree at The Wall, drinking beer and telling tall tales. Johnny Ray was one of the last OGs left, and I'll miss his humor, his openness about his alcohol struggles, and his late-night voicemails just to say hello. There are a few originals still out there, but this year has felt like a heartbreaking closing of that old chapter and the beginning of a new one. There was almost nobody left from my early days. Also, my work on the village and the very different landscape of homeless ministry in Midland has made it harder in this season to invest deeply and forge new friendships with the newer folks. I know that it won't always be the case, but for now, I have an assignment that has me somewhat disconnected from the ones who drew my heart in this ministry in the first place. What gives me hope on these sad days, when it seems like we can't do enough, isn't the exciting reality that we are about to break ground on a village of tiny homes to eventually lift 90 homeless folks off the streets into our family. My hope is not in the services or the job opportunities that we can provide through TFE to help someone have a better quality of life here on Earth. Those things are great and necessary. But even when the village is built, this work will still be hard and incomplete. There will always be people in desperately sad circumstances on the street and otherwise. My hope is the fact that Jesus is making all things new, and one day he will wipe away every tear from every eye. My hope is that some of those tears wiped away will be from the faces of friends I met on the street. More than anything I can give them, I want them to know Christ. Then, at the end of their lives, they will realize that their light and momentary afflictions, which are much worse than my own, have been preparing them for an eternal weight of glory that is far beyond comparison. There will be no broken families, addictions, divisions, or disunity. Everyone in Christ will be glorified, and we will fully realize our reconciliation with God and with each other. There will be no such thing as homelessness, because we will all be in our Father's house with many glorious rooms that Jesus has prepared in advance for us. On days like today, I feel a deep longing for eternity, and maybe that's a blessing in disguise. This world is not our home, but our calling is to fight through thorns and thistles by the sweat of our brow for the love of our neighbors, with our eyes set on eternity. Lord, let us persevere in this life, striving for your kingdom with contagious hope in your promises. This is the local and state page. This article is entitled, COVID Case Growth Drops in September, from Staff Reports. Even with an increase in the number of new cases late in the month, September continued the drop in coronavirus case growth during the month. The number of cases increased from 3,272 at the end of August to 3,890 as September came to a close. That was an increase of 18.8%. The month of August ended with a 50% increase in the number of cases. The Midland Health Department reported an increase of more than 200% from June to July. And just as the number of cases dropped, so did the number of people who died because of coronavirus-related issues. In August, that number was 27. In September, it was 16, a drop of 40.7%. In terms of cases, health department officials reported an increase in the number of cases during the last 2 weeks and increases in the number of people being tested and the percentage of those people testing positive. The number of deaths dropped to 2 during the last 2 weeks of the month, down from 6 at the beginning of the month, and as many as 9 in mid-August. Texas reports 3,346 new virus cases, but 7,006 total increase, from the Associated Press. Austin. Texas health officials on Saturday reported 3,346 newly reported coronavirus cases and 3,660 previous cases that had been unreported, for a total increase of 7,006 cases. The Texas Health Department reported 763,010 total cases and 15,992 deaths due to COVID-19, the illness caused by the virus. The department on Friday had reported 756,004 cases and 15,895 deaths. The health department said Saturday in a note on its COVID-19 dashboard that the 3,660 older cases were excluded from previous reports of newly confirmed cases. The true number of cases in Texas is likely higher, though, because many people haven't been tested and studies suggest people can be infected and not feel sick. For most people, the coronavirus causes mild or moderate symptoms, such as fever and a cough, that clear up in 2 to 3 weeks. For some, especially older adults and people with existing health problems, it can cause more severe illness, including pneumonia and death.
Hello, I'm Jesse. I'm reading from the Odessa American for Monday, October 5th. Falls dangerous for those over 65. This is a guest column by Carol Cates, who is the chief nursing officer at Odessa Regional Medical Center. Like many people, I have elderly parents. My dad turned 80 in July and thankfully is in good health. My dad and his dog Sparky go for a long walk every day. He is on very few medications and he really doesn't have any chronic health conditions. My stepmother, on the other hand, is not in good health. She has many health issues, and there is just no other way to put it, she is very fragile. To make matters worse, she barely eats. My siblings and I try every calorie-dense, protein-rich recipe we can think of because we know when she does eat, she will only eat a few bites, so every morsel must be as nutritious as we can make it. She has so few reserves between her baseline health condition and her nutritional status that my siblings and I worry constantly about her health and safety. The coronavirus pandemic has made it where she is basically in constant quarantine because she is such a high risk. But with my stepmom, there's one thing with her health that scares me more than coronavirus or any other infection. That one thing is falls. According to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, the CDC, the number one cause of accidental death in people age 65 or greater is same-level falls, and frighteningly, that number is increasing, not decreasing. The fall rate among people age 65 and older rose 30% between 2009 and 2018. Same-level falls in Texas cause death in people over the age of 65 at a rate of about 60 per 100,000 each year. About 1 in 5 falls in people over 65 causes serious injury, things like broken bones or traumatic brain injuries, or death. 3 million people in the U.S. over 65 seek emergency room care each year related to falls, and 800,000 of those people are hospitalized. 300,000 people every year suffer from hip fractures related to same-level falls. The costs related to falls are almost hard to fathom. Same-level falls in people over 65 cost patients and insurers about $50 billion annually. But that is not the biggest cost. My first job as a nurse was working in an orthopedic unit, and I saw every single day people that had fallen and fractured their hip. They were never the same. We have come a long, long way in treating hip fractures since I was a young nurse. Back then, hip fractures destroyed lives. Even with the improved treatment we have now, they are still a devastating injury, and it takes people a very long time to get back to normal. Same-level falls are most commonly related to several factors, balance and gait. As we age, we tend to lose coordination, flexibility, and balance because of inactivity. Vision. As we age, less light tends to reach the retina, which makes it harder to discern tripping hazards, edges, and obstacles. Medications. Some prescription and over-the-counter medications can affect balance, cause dizziness, cause drowsiness, or other interactions that can lead to falls. Environment. Furniture placement, rugs, stairs, or high thresholds can lead to falls. And chronic conditions like strokes, osteoporosis, diabetes, and arthritis, which make it easier to fall or make it more likely that people are seriously injured if they fall. There are many things you can do to prevent falls. The National Coalition on Aging, the NCOA, recommends discussing fall risks with your healthcare provider. Many people do not believe they are at risk for falls, even if they have fallen before. Knowing fall risk is a great place to start. The NCOA has a really good fall risk quiz on their website to help you assess your risk at https://www.ncoa.org/healthy-aging/falls-prevention/falls-free-checkup. Things you can do to reduce your risk or to keep your risk of falls low are: find a good balance and exercise program, review your medications regularly with your doctor or pharmacist to minimize risk for falls from medications, get your vision and hearing checked annually, and make sure to wear glasses if you need them, and keep prescriptions up to date, keep your home safe by removing tripping hazards, installing grab bars in bathrooms, and making sure stairs are uncluttered and stable, and talk to your family about falls so they are helping you keep your risk to a minimum. Please take some time this week to look at your risk for falling and take measures to prevent falls. It is one more thing you can do to keep yourself safe in these unprecedented times.
To Your Good Health by Dr. Keith Roach. Dermatitis trigger more stress. Dear Dr. Roach, like everyone, I have been using a lot of hand sanitizer and a lot of disinfecting wipes throughout the day. Do these sanitizing products get absorbed through the skin and build up in our bodies? I ask because I have come down with a difficult case of seborrheic dermatitis on my face, though I don't use any of these products on my face. My facial skin has always been hypersensitive, so I was thinking, if this is my weak spot, maybe the ill effects of the sanitizers and disinfecting wipes would show up there. AH. Answer. Hand sanitizers use alcohol to kill bacteria and disable viruses. The alcohols used in approved sanitizers are not well absorbed through the skin, but if they were, your body is able to metabolize the small amounts that come through. Seborrheic dermatitis is a common skin condition. Although its cause is not well understood, it is clearly triggered by stress in many people. Since many of us are stressed from work changes and from dramatic changes to our social interactions, I think it's more likely to be related to stress than to hand sanitizer use. Any dry skin might cause problems, so using some hand lotion might help.
Dear Abby, man is threatened by wife's conversations with her ex. Dear Abby, my husband Daryl gets furious every time I talk to my ex, my two oldest kids' father. The only thing we discuss is my kids' issues, but Daryl loses it completely. He starts calling me names and says I don't respect him, even though I do. I keep assuring him that there's nothing inappropriate being talked about. He's present during all the conversations, since we talk over the phone and live in different states. I don't know what to do anymore. My kids are 14 and 13-year-old girls, who are going through all these crazy teenage issues, which obviously, as their parents, my ex and I have to sometimes talk about, and it's not even that many calls. I'm wondering if this is normal because I've only been in two relationships in my life. I'm 33, and I feel like a goofball for not knowing what to do. Tough situation in Texas. Dear tough situation. No, it is not normal. Your husband's jealousy and insecurity are over the top. You have a responsibility as the mother of two teenage daughters to see them through this time of great transition, and if you feel their father is in a better position to provide input than your husband, you have a right to seek it. It's time to talk about this with a licensed marriage and family therapist because Daryl's behavior is abusive. If it isn't stopped, it may escalate. Do it now because if the verbal abuse continues and your daughters witness it, they will grow up thinking it's normal behavior, and it will negatively affect their relationships with men later in life. Dear Abby, I've been diagnosed with PTSD by my doctor. I thought only people who have been in military combat would receive a PTSD diagnosis. I've had a lifetime of verbal abuse from my mother. Once she had broken my spirit with rants of dummy, stupid, and I wish you had never been born. I was easy prey for my older brother. To get laughs, he never misses a chance to make fun of me in public. On second thought, I guess I have been through combat. Abby, do you have any ideas how to make life somewhat bearable? Constantly hurting. Dear Constantly, I sure do. Ask your doctor for a referral to a psychotherapist with expertise in family dysfunction and PTSD. Then make it a practice to avoid abusive people who seek attention by ridiculing and belittling others. If you do, your life will improve immeasurably. Trust me on that. Dear Abby, what do you think about people having drive-by baby showers? I was recently invited to one, only to arrive and find the front yard filled with people, cake, and balloons. But I had been instructed to just drop my gift and go on. I didn't expect a few people to be there with the expectant mom to greet me and receive the gift, but after traveling 25 miles only to find a full-blown party going on that I wasn't allowed to join seems very rude to me. I think if that was the plan, she should have just had a shower for these A-list guests and forgone the drive-by part. What are your thoughts on this? Turned Off in Tennessee. Dear Turned Off, you may not have been singled out to be slighted. Those at the party may have crashed the lawn from their cars. What a foolish, risky thing to subject the expectant mother to. If the revelers weren't masked, the honoree and her baby were at risk of catching COVID. What teens need to know about sex, drugs, AIDS, and getting along with peers and parents is in What Every Teen Should Know. Send your name and mailing address, plus check or money order for $8, U.S. funds, to Dear Abby, Teen Booklet, P.O. Box 447, Mount Morris, Illinois, 61054-0447. Shipping and handling are included in the price. Jacqueline Bigger Stars by Madeline Aslan. The stars show the kind of day you'll have. 5 dynamic, 4 positive, 3 average, 2 so-so, 1 difficult. A baby born today has a sun in Libra and a moon in Taurus. Happy birthday for Monday, October 5, 2020. Perceptive, life-oriented, and fair, Your life's path is according to what you believe is the common good. This year, you accomplished the most by concentrating on task after task, rather than seeing the massive idealistic picture, and you'll have incredible success. If single, you search for your soulmate, and he or she comes along when you least expect it. If attached, you're as happy as a bug in a rug. Taurus stabilizes you. Aries, March 21 through April 19. 3 stars. Today is a day of hard work tying up loose ends. A loved one could consider a new job. You will seek security and be protective of important belongings, as well as relationships. Make conservative financial decisions. Tonight, relax and take off. Taurus, April 20 through May 20. 5 stars. You're in an ambitious and highly motivated mood today. You pour all the effort you have into projects and will be working at peak capacity. A special project or romantic involvement uplifts and stimulates. Tonight, working excitedly late into the night. Gemini, May 21 through June 20. 3 stars. You are busy moving about from place to place, handling chores and thinking about work matters. Your mental abilities are strong now, and you have an emotional need to reinvigorate your studies. A short trip works to your benefit. Tonight, go out with friends. Cancer, June 21 through July 22. 5 stars. You'll be more confident, goal-oriented, and doing some extra commuter travel. Others see you as a role model. Vitality is high, and you can accomplish a great deal. Your competitive spirit is awakened. Tonight, plenty of fruitful online networking. Leo, July 23 through August 22. 4 stars. Rise to the occasion if there is an element of the unexpected at work. A sense of humor helps with unpredictable coworkers. Be well informed about new developments at work. Today is intense for you. Tonight, answer all calls and emails. Virgo, August 23 through September 22. 5 stars. Wanderlust strikes. A trip overseas or cross-country would be uplifting and successful. Try visiting places of historical and spiritual significance. Dreams can be symbolic and vivid. Write them down in a journal. Tonight, interpret them to gain insight of a higher self. Libra, September 23 through October 22. 5 stars. Patience is a must regarding a cherished project. Be discreet about voicing controversial ideas. Integrate old experiences with advice from others to find the best direction. Folk wisdom and tradition provide insight. Tonight, a bit in awe at how this is all playing out. Scorpio, October 23 through November 21. 3 stars. You'll be swept along by the plans and desires of partners. Adapt and cooperate. Teamwork is the key to success today. When in doubt, let others make initial overtures or ask for advice before you offer it. Tonight, date night. Sagittarius, November 22 through December 21. 4 stars. Working conditions may be less than perfect today. Adapt and develop an accepting attitude. You have a special rapport with animals today. The loving care you extend to them will be richly rewarded. Tonight, they'll show appreciation in unexpected ways. Capricorn, December 22 through January 19. 5 stars. Your own offspring or youngsters belonging to friends share their wisdom and wit in a memorable manner. Wholesome recreation renews you for serious projects. Clear away debris. Let go of old habits and memories. Tonight, prepare for a fresh new beginning. Aquarius, January 20 through February 18. 3 stars. Correct ongoing misunderstandings. Laugh at gossip or other rumors. People feel secure today with routine procedures rather than too many innovations. The status quo brings them comfort. You'll feel a bit reined in. Tonight, catch up with family members. Pisces, February 19 through March 20. 4 stars. Today brings calls from an old friend. You are brought up to date on juicy gossip as well as career leads. Double-check details of information received. There could be a colorful exaggeration or two to sift through. Tonight, prepare for the week ahead. Born today, singer Bob Geldof, 1951, astrophysicist Neil deGrasse Tyson, 1958, writer Madeleine Aslan, 1963.
Thank you for joining us for the readings of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.